In this episode, yours truly is a guest on the Paul, Julian, and Friends podcast. Paul has been a friend and a client for a little over 12 years, and we just discussed all things infinite banking and had fun doing so. Thank you for listening and hope you enjoy.
James Nethery, thank you for being on the podcast. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you today?
I'm doing groovy.
Groovy.
I'm tired of the rain. We had a few days of spring, and then now it's back to winter and wet, so that's right. No good.
Well, you know, a little rain helps us enjoy the sunshine.
It does. It does.
Crops need water. It's all good.
I wanted to show you right off the bat my Becoming Your Own Banker book. And you probably can't see it, but it's very feathered with lots of dog-eared corners.
I can see some yellow highlighting in there, too.
Oh, there is some highlighting. And I got this, my signed copy by Mr. Nash. So, and my, you can tell Ryan, the pages on this one are also getting pretty dog-eared, especially when I got to the policy loans. Like every other page is dog-eared. And so trying to put in the work to...
Well, hold that book up. Let's see the cover of that and the title. There you go. Thank you.
You just tried something new in your last podcast. I pulled it up and I saw it was 30-minuter with Ryan on YouTube. Showed it as like a 30-minuter. We were at Tyler State Park camping. And I was thinking, dang it, it's got another two-parter. And so I'm just going to have to wait for this because I refuse to listen to the first part. I just wait for the second part to come out and then do them both.
I got you. Yeah.
But when I started it, it said that, you know, you did the new thing where the full episode was on the members page. So I immediately jumped over there and listened to the whole thing while I was tromping through the woods at the park. And I'd like to start a little bit about talking about that. And I wrote down a couple of things from that podcast in it. You talk about capital is the core. And then the core of what? Capital is the core of what?
Well, let me say a couple of things on that. We started something new. That was the first one we did where it was a two-part, but the second part, or I say it wasn't really two-parters. There's a free version just accessible to everyone, and then the longer version was into our learning center or client-only access. We're not going to do that on every episode, but, you know, when we do, and we basically released episodes – you know, weekly, and I'm very careful, very intentional, not to mention life insurance companies' names, you know, and I'm not trying to promote anyone. I'm trying to convey the idea that someone can become their own banker at the you and me level and just encourage people to discover this idea, okay? And then, The title of that, I didn't title that. Ryan didn't title that. I think our AB guys titled that. And, you know, capital is a core of everything. I mean, I'm getting, you know, let's talking about, I'm not saying spiritually, you know, the love of money is the root of all evil. I'm not talking about spiritually. But if you're going to do anything on this earth physically, it generally takes capital. And capital is at the core of everything. Capital is at the core of every family that's operating, you know, buying, enjoying things, businesses. You know, all of that takes capital. You know, you go look at how many airplanes are taking off and flying today. Right. Right? Just in the United States of America, and I don't know what a jumbo jet costs, but it's a lot of money. And those are cash transactions. Capital. So capital is the core of everything in my opinion, as far as business, you know, operating a family. So I hope that Hope that helps. What is capital not the core of? You know, I go to church. I don't need any money. You know, I should if I like them. I'm going to support them and all of that. But even the church needs capital to operate on. You know, so.
Well, I time stamped the long version, and at 31 minutes and 40 seconds, you took over from Ryan. And that's kind of the long version, but then the short version starts at the 33-35 mark, and you talk about the siloing of capital and how the rules, I guess, today, you know, if they want you to have an account for this and an account for that and an account for that and an account for that. It's siloed for only these purposes, and you can be penalized if you use them for some other purpose, or you withdraw them at the wrong time, or you withdraw too much or too little, and that sort of thing. Go over just a little bit about how the infinite banking concept can improve upon that by not siloing your capital in so many different areas.
Yeah. You know, and Paul, I don't normally listen to myself on these recordings and podcast episodes. You know, we just release them, and, you know, I rarely listen to myself. I'm a pretty good self-critic, but I think that's pretty common, even in the way we think about money. You know, we have a checking account, it's an operating account, we might have a savings account, we call it a savings account, but it's really, we're just piling up money to make a future debt payment or purchase, whatever it may be, taxes, or, you know, I'm saving up for a down payment on a car, I'm saving up for, you know, we call it savings, but it's really short-term holding for a purchase that we know that we want and we're going to do. And then we have, you know, like retirement accounts where all the, and I'm talking about typical financial planning, you know, personal finance, retirement planning, where, you know, it's like we silo our money. I mean, that's exactly what we do in my words, using that silo of money. We have this account over here for retirement. Maybe it's an IRA or 401k, maybe it's a 403b. And then we have an account over here that's maybe a Roth, and it's for retirement as well, but it's taxed differently. You know, and then maybe we have some CDs, maybe we have some money market accounts, maybe we have some outside investments or individual accounts that are not in qualified retirement plans. You know, we just go to a brokerage house and, you know, open an account and trade stocks or just buy some stocks or what have you. I mean, all of the money, it's all of your money, but it's all separated, right? Or siloed with the terminology that I used earlier. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like we assign them purposes, you know, and they're all kind of, it's all of our money, they're different accounts and different things. And, you know, and we can talk about, you know, weighting the averages or risk or dollar cost averaging. And there's lots of reasons why we do these things, but fundamentally, it's all of your capital. It's all yours, right? And whether you're going to use some of it in the short term and or some of it in the long term and some of it in between. And in the typical financial world, you know, and I've been in it for over 33 years, it's just, but I don't know everything, haven't been everywhere, and I haven't done everything. I'm not that guy. But it's pretty common by the time someone reaches quote-unquote retirement age, whatever that age may be, you know, they have all of these different accounts that they've accumulated over the years. You know, maybe they bought some life insurance or an annuity from their brother-in-law. Maybe they have a 403b at work. Maybe they have a 401k at work. Maybe they have a pension. You know, and the idea of pensions, that's on the outs. Most, unless you're a government employee or a governmental employee or one of the few of the Fortune 500 companies that still have a pension, most people don't have pensions. Right. But anyway, we wind up at retirement. We have all of this money, our money spread out in different types of accounts, and which is, I'm not saying good, bad, or indifferent. Could there be a better way? Might there be a more simple way of life? And simplicity is a virtue, right? I mean, simplicity is a virtue. So that's kind of what I was talking about. And we do a client-only event generally once a year and a half for the last several years. And that was actually the title of a presentation that I gave, is a prioritization of assets for income in retirement. You know, when you that's a kind of a major change in most people's lives when they reach this point of retirement. And they have all of these different accounts. It's all of theirs, and all of it is theirs. But has it been consistent or congruent with each other? You know, what do? You know, you just try to lump sum them all together. You just take, it's kind of it's actually an opportunity to simplify, in my opinion, and kind of get clarity.
We spoke about this a couple months ago. My mother-in-law, she's in hospice now, but she's got like 12 different accounts, you know, some of them big, some of them little, and it's like, good grief.
How old is she, can I ask?
She's 88.
88. Managing, of all the things you got to manage in life, how to get out of bed, keep your mobility, keep your cognitive, skills up, feeding, dressing, moving, right, taking care of a dog if you have it, the yard, the house, and all that, and then 12 different investment accounts. I bet she doesn't. I don't know, but I'll bet you she gets statements in the mail, she throws them away or piles them up somewhere. She's not managing those.
Well, yeah.
Look at me. I'm assuming.
It has to be. We thought about simplifying it a few years ago, and she has, Melissa has power of attorney and that sort of stuff, but it just seemed like it was, I guess, going to be done sooner rather than later, with her age and condition, but we're just going to wait till it's time and take care of it then. So, yeah. But yeah, it's,
see, that's,
yeah,
and then that's, that's Melissa's mother.
Yes.
That we're talking about. Yeah. And so, I'm sure Melissa, the children want to take care of their parents. I mean, but it's a learning curve. It becomes a learning curve. You know, there's an education that you and Melissa's is going to enjoy,
I'm not sure about the enjoyment part, but it is an education, that's for sure. I mean, I do kind of like that stuff, but it causes you to look at, or it has caused me to look at my stuff as well. Melissa's big on simplicity, and I am simple in a lot of ways, but not as simple as she would like in some.
I can't help it, honey. I'm a complex man.
I guess so. What's the difference? How, if you're trying to teach your grandkids and your kids and you reinforce to yourself, what's the difference between capital and money, and how should they be treated differently?
Yeah, that's, it's a great question, and people, academics like Ryan will go right down the road of clarification on that. And money to me is just a medium of exchange. That's all it is. Capital is, can be a lot of things. It could be physical. Right. It could be production capabilities. So simplistically, money is a medium of exchange, and money is really not wealth. Well, wealth that you exchange money for is, in my opinion, goods and services. Right. Capital could be, there's a physical nature of capital, could be machinery, production equipment, a lot of things. And then it could also be a little bit, or it could be very broad. You know, there's intellectual capital, right? You can have all of this, all of these material things, and they'll have value, but then it takes in my opinion, the individual to understand what is available and then potentially recognize opportunity and take those material things and create more value. That yeah. makes sense.
I think Ryan was talking about the reading from Frank Fetter. Is it that correct? The other day yep. on the recent podcast, and I guess he had a pretty eloquent and well thought out definition of capital.
Well, Ryan's doing. I mean, his, and I'm not speaking for Ryan at all. You know, I mean, he's the Austrian economist and working on his PhD, and he's going to bring some clarity and I think some knowledge to the academic world concerning Austrian economics and drilling right down on capital.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so. Look forward to that happening.
Yeah,
you know. Right. He is very eloquent, you know, and he's done a lot of work on capital and capital yes. theory.
Yeah. He has. I was listening to it, like I said, as I was walking, and I was like, "Could you repeat that, or slow it down, or just a little bit? Yeah, make it simple for me."
Look, I've met plenty of people that quite often, if you're going to listen to Ryan talk, you know, on a particular subject, such as capital and capital theory, it'd be okay to have a Webster's dictionary handy.
You're right. Exactly.
Do yourself a favor and listen to it twice, you know, yeah. or three times.
Take right. notes, slow it down.
Yeah.
I just got a statement in for one of the grandkids' policies, and I'm curious what you think about this. They always seem to, at least a couple of times a year, I get a offer, I guess, to change their dividend allocation. And they always, in my opinion, encourage you, or their first option is, so I've got to go into the PUA, but they always encourage me to go to the IDO allocation, which stands for Indexed Dividend Crediting Option. Yeah. Why would they want me to... change that, do you think?
Well, they're giving you the opportunity to do so, and that's the time to do so is it on an anniversary. Mm-hmm. And was the question, what do I think about that? Is that the question? Because
I want to know what you think.
Yeah, so you know, when it comes to the infinite banking concept, we you know, look, if I back up very fundamentally, banking is a process. Right, it's not a product. You can bank with anything. You can mm-hmm. bank with equity. You can bank with in your home and real estate portfolio. You can bank with options. You know, you can go to the brokerage house and get a loan on margin. Right, you can bank with cows. You can bank with anything. Right, you're just taking something of value and leveraging it. Right. And if you look at what banking is, it's really the movement of money, deposits, withdrawals, loans, loan repayments, just the movement of money. And then, and if you look at Nelson Nash, he held that book up, his first book, Becoming Your Own Banker. It's unlock the infinite banking concept is a subtitle, right? So the infinite banking concept, infinite is just not finite, right? It's infinite. Banking is a movement of money, and then concept is just an abstract idea. Now, I know you asked me about the index dividend option, and I'm getting there. All right. And I'm just clarifying that banking is a process, not a product. But whenever you practice the infinite banking concept, if you choose to do that, then products matter, structure. There's a lot of other additional things to consider. And it's pretty straightforward and simple. But Nelson Nash taught people how to, he showed people how they could control the banking function. And they could do so with an entity that already exists. You don't have to go start a bank, right? You don't have to put up a bunch of money and get a bunch of approvals. And we're talking about the infinite banking concept, controlling the banking function with dividend-paying whole life insurance. Okay. And if we talk about that for a moment, there's all kinds of life insurance. This is permanent insurance. And there's several types of permanent insurance. We're talking very specifically about dividend paying whole life insurance issued by a mutual company. Right. And there are only two types of companies. Stock companies are owned by shareholders. Mutual companies are owned by the policyholders. And if you have a dividend paying whole life insurance policy issued by a mutual company and they are successful or they have a positive financial experience in a given year, they share that positive experience with the owners of the company. Who are the owners? The policyholders. And so whenever you, being a policyholder of a mutual life insurance company that had a positive experience, they pay the dividend. And you mentioned briefly that you generally have it paid into the paid up additions rider, which is correct. And then now this mutual company, and they're not the only one, there's several of them. They've come out in the last several years, you know, probably 5 or 8 years, maybe 10 by now, where they'll give you the opportunity, you, the policy holder, owner, to choose, instead of just taking the declared dividend, you can choose to have the dividend based on an outside index, right? So you can elect to have your dividend indexed. I think it's most of them are to the S&P 500 or something like that. So if the S&P 500 goes up, you, and they have calculations in there, you could potentially get a higher dividend than what they declared. And you could also potentially get a lower dividend than what they declared. So there's the background. You asked me what I think of it. Here's what I think of it. I think the mutual life insurance companies just ought to be a good, solid mutual life insurance company. Be in the life insurance business, right?
Right.
Do proper underwriting. Do proper claims paying, right? Build the products that the consumers want. And then be prudent in your investments, right? Be prudent in your philosophy. Just that's what I think life insurance companies should be, a mutual life insurance company. I don't want anything exotic that they have. I just want them to be a well-run mutual company. And if they are, then they're going to be profitable. And most all of these companies have been profitable for over 100 years and have not failed to pay a dividend, and the dividend is not a guaranteed component, right? It's a non-guaranteed component. But my point here directly is I don't think much about the index dividend option at all. I encourage all of our clients. I'm not interested in doing it. I own policies on every company we represent. So I own policies with that company. And quite frankly, I wish they would just remember who they are. Right. And what they do, instead of trying to be all things to all people. Life insurance is not an investment. Can you go buy investment life insurance, variable universal life? Sure you can. I think this is a case of the life insurance company being trying to be all things to all people. And if you want your policy owners to earn the best dividend, then you need to be profitable. In a consistent and solid way. I'm not talking about taking unnecessary risk or what have you. So I don't really think much of it, Paul, Julian.
I don't either. And I was just curious on your thoughts because it's always on the little statement I get. It's always, and I get once or twice a year, I'll get something just asking me if I want to change. And I just thought it was strange, and why they would have that particular, that's the only thing I get from them, other than the, you know, the kind of the premium bill. And then the
they get a premium due notice. They want you to pay the premium for that. Sure, don't they? And then an annual statement, and then some privacy mailings throughout the year, you know, but yeah.
All right. So here's another pet peeve. And so with this particular, the company that I have the grandkids policies on, they insist that you do everything to get a policy loan, which also don't do that often, but they insist that you do everything by snail mail. So, you know, wet signatures, print everything off, and it's a simple 15-step process to get the thing printed off. And then snail mail it in, and then several days to
if everything goes right.
Or do you need something back? But they, when you want to pay your loan back, you can do it. You can do that online, so electronically. So
all I can tell you is
it's not a question. It's just.
No. I'm not a water boy for the life insurance companies.
Right.
All right. And some of them have better online capabilities than others. No doubt about that. I think most of them are trying to get into the 21st century.
Right. I think got a notice that Lafayette Life is upgrading something pretty soon on their website.
Well, that's not Lafayette Life that you got to do everything through the mail.
No. This was different. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a separate notice that happened there.
Yeah. Look, let me continue on that too, because you know, it shouldn't take that long to get a loan. No question. But now with this is 2025, this is February, you know, with this, 2-step verification that's being forced upon all the financial institutions, including life insurance, you know, it's going to, in my opinion, make it a little bit more painful while these companies are implementing all of that, you know, so, but there is hope.
Got that to look forward to. Okay. I have I'm not looking for advice. I know you don't give advice to on anybody but your clients. If you have a windfall, or you sell something, and you have outstanding policy loans, which I do, and you have the choice to pay off an income-producing asset or pay off the policy loans. Again, not asking for advice or what to do, but how would you think about the options, and what considerations would you want to make in deciding to where to place that capital? So I can pay off the policy loan, I can pay off the rent house, and then have the rent house, the payments that we're going to rent, going back to pay off the policy. What are the considerations?
Well, I would, you know, if I had a windfall coming, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's quite individualized, right? What am I doing?
Right.
Where do I want to go? How close am I getting, or how close am I to being there? You know, what kind of abilities do you have currently?
Sure.
And then you know, after all of that, it's, you know, there's always the math, right? How much interest do you want to be charged on the outstanding loan?
Mm-hmm.
What's the rate of return on the asset, the equity in the asset? You know, you can map that out five ways to Sunday. And
yeah,
if you can't, your brother-in-law engineer, he'll help you. No disrespect to brother-in-laws and engineers. I have both and I love them. I'm just saying that you can get lost in the math, right?
Yeah, sure.
So I think it's really dependent upon, you know, those things. How much interest do you want to pay? You know, how long do you want to carry that note? I believe fundamentally that having the ability to pay off an asset or purchase an asset is a stronger position than actually making the purchase or paying an asset off. If I have the ability, I'm in a superior position.
Right.
Because as soon as I pay off the asset, whatever it is, a car, a piece of equipment, a house, and, you know, the cash flow is going to continue to come. Great. Well, what is the rate of return on the equity in that asset? You know, if we're talking about math, right? And mm-hmm. I know you're talking about real estate. You talk to 20 different people in the real estate industry, and they'll give you 25 different answers.
Yeah.
You know, the rate of return on that equity is zero, my opinion, in real estate, and probably depreciating, losing value in other assets like equipment. You know, have an equipment loan, I can pay off the
right
equipment and get rid of the loan payment and the interest. There's that. There's no question. But then as soon as I pay off an asset, if I want access to that equity, I'm going to the third-party lender, coughing up 2 years of, you know, income taxes and all of that. And they're going to tell me how much they're going to lend me on that asset that is a appreciating, should be an appreciating asset in real estate, right? Not always. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Cash flowing asset. And so it speaks to who's controlling the banking function, you know, and the banker can do whatever they want to do. So I like having the strongest position possible. If I can pay like a rental property off, does that mean I should just run out and go do that? No, not necessarily. If I have the ability, I can get mad and quit anytime. You know,
right.
I can go pay it off at any time. So, does that answer your question? Or it wasn't a question, but yeah, those are my thoughts on it.
Kind of, sort of.
Well, I'm an insurance agent. You know, that's the way all my
answers are. Kind of, sort of. This is not investment advice.
I just said that because most people's view of an insurance agent. I'm many.
No, yeah. Things. The like y'all have said before, you know, capital wants to find a home. It's going to reside somewhere. You know, and it definitely is individual decision, you know, specific to your circumstances. And I guess that's what I'll have to deal with. You know, I this house is not on a long term, it's on a 20-year note or 20 or 15-year note. And the interest rate, you know, it reset last summer, of course.
Oh, yeah? It went down, huh? yeah, tell us about that. What did the interest rate do? It's a 20-year amortization table.
Yeah.
Or just a 20-year one?
It's 8.5 at least. I'd have to look at it. But it's close to 9. And so I'm just thinking about the volume of interest, like you talk about, that is going.
I'd personally be hard pressed. Not that I wouldn't, not that I haven't. In today's environment, I'm not interested in paying 8.5 unless it's to an entity that I own and control, and then I'll pay 10 or more.
Right.
You know, but yeah, it's like I'm kind of out on that. So the infinite banking concept, it depends. You know, if you can go out, type in infinite banking, banking with life, becoming your own banker. And there's all kinds of things that come up on social media now, you know, and you get mm-hmm. that solid advice for 30 seconds and beautiful presentations. And, you know, it's almost disheartening. There's some good stuff out there. Don't misunderstand me. But, you know, the people that pay for the most exposure are the ones you least want to work with. If you knew what was going on in the infinite banking footprint, you know, and that's just my humble opinion. But if I had a bunch of loans at, or it didn't matter. It does matter the size of the loan. If I had outstanding loans, you know, at 8.5, I mean, I would, in my mind, I would want to get rid of them, you know. And then the best method to do that was to just pay cash and be done. Or if you have policies like yourself, you know, could there be a better way? Could you pay less interest in that loan? You know, these life insurance company policy loans are anywhere from, you know, 5.25% up to 7% currently. Mm-hmm. I mean, all that beats 8.5%. And then you have velocity of money too. You know, I mean, how fast do you want to pay that loan off? Do you want to keep it going for 20 years, you know, and let it adjust up again? I don't know.
I do not. So, my goal is to definitely pay it off sooner rather than later. And to me, when you look at, like y'all talk about the velocity of, not the velocity of money, the volume of interest, on that note that could be going to back into the policy. It's just, and I know there's no right or wrong answer to it, but that's what I'm looking to do, because the volume of interest, you know, going into that note every month at the bank is just.
Yeah. Let's talk about that rate versus volume. You know, the rate's 8.5. If you do a 20 year, and I know it's not, there may not be 20 years left on it, you know, but if you did a, you could even at 6%, there's all kinds of calculators. You can go out and do a simple calculator, you know, do a 20-year amortization table, 30-year amortization table. If you're 8.5% on a 20-year amortization table, that's about 45, and I'm just ballpark guessing here, but that's about 45% of that total cash flow. That's the volume of interest that you'd be paying. It's volume. Right. That's the volume, 40-45%. Could be higher, be higher on other loans. Mortgage loans, but the rate is 8.5. So yeah, it makes a difference. It makes a huge difference. There's an absolute difference between rate versus volume. And so, and knowing what I know, but I've, you know, look, I've practiced the infinite banking concept personally and professionally for a little over 20 years. And, you know, everyone's situation is different. You know, I mean, I know, sure. You know, you're talking about policies that y'all own on your grandchildren. You know, we have policies. If I wanted to buy a new policy, I would do that first and then go pay the things off that I wanted to pay off. That's what I would do for me if it made sense. And it may not make sense for everyone, you know. But when you have policies, you know, you have a little bit more control, you know.
Right. So I'm just pulling up the volume of interest on this note. And the payment made on January 13th was $1,210.994 worth of interest. There you go.
There you go. It's going away, gone. LOSTFOREVER forever. Right. So if, and I know this is conceptual, what have you, but it's also very factual. If I own a life insurance policy issued by a mutual company, we've already established the owner of that company being a mutual company is the policyholders. I'm a policyholder. So that would include me. Mm-hmm. I'm paying premium. It's their money as soon as I write them a check. I am buying a death benefit, right? Because it's life insurance. Doesn't come any other way. Now, I'm also accumulating cash value within the policy, or the policy is accumulating cash value on a guaranteed basis and on a non-guaranteed basis, the dividend. So there's two primary components or functions to the increase in cash value of a life insurance policy. I'm an owner of the company. That's a contract. The life insurance policy is a contract. And if I have the cash value, and the only thing that limits what I can borrow from the life insurance company is how much I've paid in premium. All right. So if I've been paying premium and I have cash value, then I have a contractual right to tell them to send me a check. All right. And not every company takes a week or two and you have to do it on paper. We processed $1 million loans within 3 business days. So it is possible. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So as soon as I borrow their money, they have to charge me an interest rate because they took that money that they are lending me out of their investment pool that they have to keep working to meet their future obligations, which is my death benefit and then my future cash values if I got mad and quit. You know, yeah. Those are direct obligations to the life insurance company. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a simple arbitrage. If I can borrow money from them at 6, 6.5, even 7, I borrow money at 7, I'm directly supporting the profitability of that life insurance company. Am I or am I not?
You are.
So if they're profitable and I'm an owner and they're a mutual company, they're going to share their financial experience with me. So if they're profitable, I'm going to indirectly support the dividend on my policy. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And now I've got their capital at 7. And I go pay off an 8.5% loan. I mean, that's simple arbitrage, right? 8.5 is bigger than 7, right?
Yeah. Is the arbitrage even bigger than that?
It can be.
With them on a real estate note at compound interest?
Well, I'm just talking about the simple difference in interest rates, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And so there is a difference between an amortized loan.
Amortized, that's what I mean.
And an unamortized loan. And what you get, the loans you get from a life insurance company is really an unstructured loan. You, the policy owner, the borrower in this case, tells the life insurance company how and when you're going to pay them back and at what rate.
Right. Well, I get the bill from the insurance. Say I've got an outstanding loan and I get the bill from the insurance company for that year's interest. Is that interest simple interest based on the loan amount for that whole year?
Yeah. Well, that's a fair question. So if you have a policy loan outstanding, whether you're paying loan repayments or not, mm-hmm. when you get to the end of the year, you're going to get an annual statement, all right? And they send annual statements because there's no market risk. You get quarterly statements when there's a market risk, typically in the financial world. At the end of the year, I get an annual statement. And if I have an outstanding loan, whether I'm making loan repayments or not, they're going to bill me for the interest due.
Right.
Right. It's my choice whether I pay that or not, mm-hmm. the interest. And if I don't pay it at that point right there, it compounds.
Okay.
Right. If I paid the interest, then it wouldn't compound. But if I never make an interest payment, of course it's going to compound.
So it'd be compounding daily after that, kind of like your...
No, it compounds annually.
Okay.
All right. So and let's look at that. Let's say I have a $10,000 loan. Easy math for me, right?
I like easy math.
Yeah, and let's say it's a 5% loan interest rate. If I borrow $10,000 from the life insurance company at 5%, that's $500 in interest that they're going to charge me, mm-hmm. right? Okay, that's an annual interest rate. So you take 500 and divide it by 365 days in a year, and that's how much interest I'm going to be charged daily. It's not compounding because it's an annual interest rate. I'm just being charged daily. So, what is that good, bad, or indifferent? That's the way it is. So now, if I go 30 days and make an $800, or let's say I make $1,000 loan repayment, right? Mm-hmm. You take that 500 divided by 365, however many days that is, that interest, that daily charge, right? Times that by 30, I'm going to make $1,000. That interest is paid and the rest of it goes to principal. So it flips exactly opposite of what your mortgage shows, where $900 went to interest and, you know, 300 went to principal. And this, and I don't have a calculator in front of me, but you know, you'll have whatever, $40 or $50 going to interest and $950 going to principal. So the loan recalculates right then, right? So now I have a, you know, a $9,100 or $9,050 loan balance. It's still at 5% interest. So $9,050 times 5% divided by 365 days, that's how much interest I'm going to be charged for the remainder of that year. And if I make another payment in 30 days, so the loan recalculates every time you make a loan repayment. It is so the opposite of an amortized loan.
Right.
And of course, if you think about it, the lender, number one, they're not going to lend you money if you don't have any character or collateral or, you know, credit, right? The lender's going to borrow you money, or the lender's going to loan you money on assets. They're not, if your home is worth $200,000, they're not going to lend you $200,000. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to over collateralize their position. And then they're going to be paid back as soon as possible. All that interest is up front. You know, and every time you make a mortgage payment, you're strengthening the position of the lender. If you think that through, they're getting all their. What happens if you have when should a lender, and I'm not saying they're all bad and evil and all of that, but to emphasize my point that you strengthen the lender's position with every payment. Let's say you have a 30-year note. 360 mortgage payments. All right, when should they foreclose on you? Day one? Or how about that 299th month? You know, every time you make a payment, you're strengthening the position of the lender. And now if you're going to borrow money from someone, I guess you'd want them to be strong. There's no question about that. But this whole idea of becoming your own banker and actually controlling the banking function, I just encourage people to discover this idea and what it could actually mean to them and their family. It goes way beyond interest rates, way beyond dividends. Are those important? Yes, they're important. You know, the death benefit's important, too, for the future. I know nobody wants a death benefit and leave anybody else rich and all of that, but that all sounds good, you know. And if you have a guaranteed cash value, that's access to capital on a guaranteed basis. You tell me, Paul, one business that's gone out of business, one business that's filed bankruptcy because they had too much capital.
Too much capital, yeah. Not tell you. I don't think there is one.
Yeah, I don't either.
Too much capital. All right. That's solidified my plan on this.
Uh-oh. So what did you decide? Don't keep us from it. What are you going to do? Tell us.
So I'm selling one property that I use combination of policy loans and other stuff to buy. So I went for only free and clear. So I'm going to pay that up. When that sells, I'll take that money and pay off the rent house next door that I bought. And the rent that I get every month will then go straight into paying off the policy loans. And the policy loan will take me 5 or 6 years to pay off rather than 20. So
yeah,
that's my plan.
I got you. Well, thanks for sharing your plan with us, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks for sharing how to think about it. That was kind of how I was thinking about it, especially when I was looking at the volume of interest versus the interest rate, which y'all talk about quite a bit.
How long have you been paying premium in life insurance?
I was looking at mine. Well, mine just came due the other day. I had a birthday. 2012 is what the policy shows.
Wow. 13 years. Good job, sir. Would you do anything different if you had to start out longer?
You know I would. You know I would. You know what I would do different.
I guess if we go back 10 or 13 years, we'd all do something different, wouldn't we?
Yeah, I just... I didn't believe in myself enough to that I could pay as much premium as I should have. So I didn't believe in my, I don't know, capabilities. Probably shortchanged myself and my family a little bit. But I'm trying to make amends with the grandkids' policies, wives. We just changed Shays over to whole life, converted it. And so I'm committed to paying premium.
Perfect.
Committed to paying premium. So, yeah, it's the whole deal like you talk about. You wish you'd have done more sooner.
I don't want to throw you off track, sir.
No, but yeah, I wish I would have done more sooner as far as premiums and everything. So now I'm trying to make up ground and find other ways. So we got me and Melissa have policies, 5 grandkids house policies, and now we've got one just started on Shay. So I appreciate that.
Perfect. Well, you know, good job. If you know better, you should do better.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't know better, I mean, it's, you know, I think we're all our own limiter. You know, all the limits are really between our ears. So.
Sure. All right. A couple of things. I know you got a hard stop. What's your succession plan with banking with life? I mean, you're not going to do this till you're 112, right? So if...
Only if I live to 112.
call the funeral home, come get him out of his chair in his office. He was doing a podcast.
Yeah.
Is there a succession plan for... I mean, obviously the life insurance company is the kind of the... who you have the contract with, but... How does an office like yours think about that?
Yeah. Well, generally, offices like mine, you know, they either sell or they create their own succession plan. I don't know. I want to be like my mentor, R. Nelson Nash. He lived until he was 88 years of age, all right? And he was pretty active, you know, very active. I don't think I met him till he was about 70. I think he was 70. I think he was 72-ish. And I think I was probably 40, maybe 41, somewhere around there. His mentor died, graduated the night before he was going to deliver a speech. And I believe he was age 82. He's either 82 or 85. So I want to be just like them. You know, yep. I believe this is a calling. I'm fulfilling a calling and I enjoy people. I love people and I get to meet and work with really cool people. I think people are very creative and I just enjoy that. I enjoy people and I like numbers and money and life insurance, you know, and economics. So it checks a lot of boxes for me, sir.
Sure.
But I've done this for, I guess it's about 34 years now, 34. And I'm going to go as long as I can. I'm not going to, you know, continue to work 40, 60 hours a week. You know, I'm not doing that anymore. But directly to our succession plan is I have an office here. My youngest son is here. You know, there's like nine team members here that, you know, two ladies that work in service. I mean, everybody has their own primary responsibility, but then, you know, we're a team. We work together on all the other projects. So
you're the big toe, You're the big toe of that team.
I'm sorry?
You're the big toe. The Sergeant Hulk is big toe.
But I can't do what I do without them, you know?
Yeah.
And then we've got a lot of clients too I've got clients that are literally, I've had clients for 30 years, you know, they're aging and they're graduating or their spouses graduating and they're, I mean, there's no way I could leave them without proper care, service, support. So my succession plan is this office can run without me. You know, absolutely. And then however they want to run that going forward, if they don't want to, you know, spend a lot of time engaging new clients, which I can't see why they wouldn't, there's plenty of work to support our existing clients.
Gotcha.
I'm not interested in selling, you know, some.
Oh no!
That's been a pretty big deal, you know, the buyouts, the mergers and acquisitions in the financial world, mm-hmm. you know, with all the registered investment advisory firms. That's a big deal. Well, it touched off into the life insurance business too, where I mean, big money's coming in and buying and offering stupid multiples for mm-hmm. offices and practices, and I just don't think anyone can take care of. And, you know, support our clients better than we can. I wouldn't trust them.
I agree with
so,
that.
That's my succession plan, sir, is to for this office to exist beyond me. There'll be enough capital for them to do that, right? And like Jake, he's been here with me 8-9 years.
Yeah.
You know, and I have different ages here. You know, there's young people in their 20s and then, you know, older people up to my age. So there's a transfer of knowledge. You know, you can't get experience without getting experience. You know what I mean? Just because you're able and capable at 30 years old doesn't mean that, I'm just saying that you just don't have the experience that someone has of 45, 50, 60 years of age.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that small characteristic of our office, different age groups.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's what I like about working at the fire stations I worked at. We always had a constant. We had older guys that had been there a long time, been on the job a long time, and then we had a constant influx of rookies and guys in the middle. So it was good. Kept you young.
That's right.
So I don't like that. Hey, last thing. If I have enough time, I want you to be able to tell everybody where to find you at the various different platforms. But I would like one final question is, what do you like to do outside of the infinite banking world? What do you do in your off hours?
Well, I appreciate you asking. I like to hunt, you know, hunt pheasant. I'm not a big hunter. I was a hunter when I was a young guy, but I like to shoot. You know, we shoot clays, mm-hmm. you know, skeet and trap. I like that a lot. You know, I like kicking around with my family just at home, taking care of, you know, we got a little property, and so there's plenty of work around there to do.
Yeah, there is.
And then we like to travel. I like to travel. My family. That's something, you know, my wife, Jen, and I decided a long time ago that instead of giving our children gifts, you know, for like Christmas and birthdays, which they still get gifts, but not, you know, we'd rather give them experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so we've probably been doing that for 10 or 15 years. And that has resulted in, now listen, I'm a country boy from Johnson County, Texas. Right. I mean, but we've been all over the world. You know, because of that mindset of giving experiences instead of gifts. Yeah. And that's so we really like to travel, and that's been instilled in my children. And, you know, even Riley, who's 17 now, our youngest child, when she was a little bitty girl, you know, she'd go to school and after summer break, and the teachers would say, "Wow, what did y'all do?" You know, and she kept saying, I forget what it was. We went to Ireland one year, right? And she kept saying Ireland. And the teachers knew that my wife, Jana, was from Iowa. And so the teacher was trying to correct Riley. "You mean Iowa?" She said, "No, Ireland." And they're like, "Oh, my gosh." Well, then the teachers would ask my wife. She said, "Well, one of them, I know specifically, Jana, why did y'all take Riley to Ireland? She's not going to remember anything at her age, however old she was, you know." And well, we did, because we just, at that time, we wouldn't travel without her, you know, wherever we went, she went. But I don't agree with that at all. I've watched my children's horizons expand from traveling. And so we really enjoy that. Thanks for asking me that. So, you know, just hanging out with family. We hang out on the weekends, have pool parties, cookouts, you know, sit out back by the campfire, or not the campfire, but the fire pit, you know.
Yeah. That sounds like fun. That sounds like fun.
Well, you're welcome. Anytime you come down, if it's in the summertime, you can swim. If it's cold, you can sit out by the fire pit.
Careful what you invite me to. I might show up.
All right,
there's a Spartan race in. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You're good.
There's a Spartan race in Granbury in October. You ever done anything like that?
No, the best I've done was CG. I'm not an Iron Man like you. You know,
No. I'm not an Iron Man. This is
whatever.
If you do one, so I got my 75 and 73 year old friends. They do it with me, so I think you could hang.
I'd be the young guy. I'd be the guy in the middle, huh? You know, my wife and I work out regularly, and we got off into CG Camp Gladiator real big, you know, and I really enjoy that. And they're all younger, you know, but today I'm just working on, you know, mobility and flexibility.
I understand that. Tie my shoes.
You know, be able to put your pants on one leg at a time without while you're standing up, right?
Yeah. Without busting your head wide open. Yeah. All right. James Nethery, tell everybody where they can go to find out more about you and your office and the things that you do, and just any parting words you want to say to listen to the podcast.
I appreciate that. So bankingwithlife.com is our website, bankingwithlife.com. And you go there, that'll tell you, and it's always a work in progress, but it'll tell you who we are, what we do, why it matters. You know, we have a bookstore, and there's a learning center there. And then, of course, there's other client-only access, but there's a learning center there, a lot of stuff that is at no cost. You know, it's just there if you want to consume it. And then we have a podcast. I think the YouTube channel is, you know, James Nethery. It's either James Nethery or Banking with Life. And we have over 500 videos out there on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, wherever you consume, you know, your podcast. I think we'll be on there. Rumble, Odyssey. I don't really know where we're all at, Paul, but James Nethery. Or bankingwithlife.com. And my encouragement, sincerely, is for you, the listener, whomever can hear this or see this, discover the infinite banking concept for yourself, for you, for your family. And I would encourage you, if you're willing to spend a couple of $100s, and whether you do or not is totally your business, and you know, God bless you. But if you're interested in learning about the infinite banking concept, go to the source. You know, Paul held up the book earlier, Becoming Your Own Banker. And that's R. Nelson Nash who discovered this, you know, this concept that you could actually control the banking function in your life. And then you can learn what that could mean to you. And if you spend a couple of $100s buying original source material, Nelson's first book, second book, some incendiary books, and video access to Nelson Nash himself teaching his course, I think it would be well worth your time. Don't try to learn this on TikTok, right? And there's a lot of good stuff on TikTok. I get all that. But go to the source, right, and learn there. And if you think you want to implement it, call our office. The best life insurance policies designed for the infinite banking concept as taught by R. Nelson Nash, the best ones come through our office in Fort Worth, Texas. So thanks for – that's about as promotional as I've ever been.
Well, I appreciate it. And you had me on a podcast a couple of years ago, and I said it then and I'll say it now. I told Melissa, if anything ever happens to me and you're wondering what to do financial wise or anything like that, call James Nethery, and whatever he says, then that'll be the way to go. So
I appreciate that, Paul. And I hope nothing happens to you anytime soon. But we'll.
Yeah, I hope they're dragging me out of the gym. They just dragged me out of the gym on my 100th birthday, and
call the corner to pick you up at the Ironman or the. I'm sorry, what do you call that?
Spartan race.
Have him hauled off at the Spartan race down there.
Get me over to the Coyotes. So,
right. Yeah. There you go.
James, thanks for being on the podcast. I really appreciate you and everything you do.
Paul, thank you for having me. I enjoyed this, sir, and I enjoy talking to you. So thank you.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.